From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Last night, President Joe Biden addressed the Democratic National Convention less than 1 month after he reluctantly agreed to give up his struggling re-election campaign and throw his support to Vice President Kamala Harris.
I made a lot of mistakes in my career, but I gave my best to you. For 50 years, like many of you, I've given my heart and soul to our nation. And I've been blessed a million times in return for the support of the American people. I've either been too young to be in the Senate because I wasn't 30 yet, and too old to stay as president. But I hope you know how grateful I am to all of you. I can honestly say, and I mean this from the bottom, give me my word as a Biden, I can honestly say I'm more optimistic about the future than I was when I was elected as a 29-year-old United States senator. I mean it.
Tonight, DNC delegates will hear from Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and a favorite son of Illinois, former state senator Barack Obama. For our part, we begin today with Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. He's a Democrat representing Chicago's northwest suburbs. Among other assignments, he's the ranking member, the top Democrat, on the U.S. House Select Committee on Strategic Competition between the United States and the Chinese Communist Party. Congressman Krishnamoorthy, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Hey, great to be back. Thank you.
What did you think, or what do you think, of Vice President Kamala Harris as the nominee? I saw you tweeted that you greeted her when she arrived in Chicago.
I did. I had the opportunity, along with the Illinois delegation, to greet her at the airport when she landed in Chicago. And I'm an enthusiastic supporter of her. I think that just the energy is just off the charts right now in terms of people's positivity, in terms of their enthusiasm, in terms of their willingness to do everything it takes to get her elected president. I think she's exactly the right person for the job at this moment, and certainly compared to the alternative, this is a future-facing choice, and I think that she is going to make an excellent president.
It's striking to think of where we were 1 month ago when it was still a minority of Democrats who had publicly come out and said that Biden should step aside from the race. What do you think of his decision to do that?
I think he said it best when he said that he reveres the office, but he loves his country more. And he thought it was time to pass the torch to the next generation of leadership, including Kamala Harris, who has distinguished herself in so many different jobs in public service over the years, from being a district attorney to being an attorney general to being a U.S. senator and now the vice president. I think she's due for a promotion. And if you were in the hall last night, there were tens of thousands of people who agreed boisterously with that sentiment.
So you are, I would say, a proud Asian American. You were at an event, a DNC event yesterday I saw for AAPI, Asian American Pacific Islanders. I wonder what you make of former President Trump's critique of Harris's multiracial identity, where he falsely said she always identified as Asian and also only recently began identifying as Black. And I guess just to be clear, well, she has consistently talked about living both aspects of her heritage.
I think it's repulsive. I think that, you know, it's also anachronistic. You know, in this country, there are almost 40 million Americans at this point who identify themselves, self-identify as being multiracial in background. And it's a deeply personal kind of expression of who you are to say you are of mixed heritage and what that heritage is. For him to kind of appropriate to himself the title of identity decider in chief, and he gets to redefine people as he sees fit. It's not their decision. I think is exactly the reason why he's unfit to be president. Not only is it wrong, he's deeply out of touch with what America is.
All right, I want to come back to some politics questions a little later on, but I do want to talk a little policy stuff. As I mentioned, you are on this committee for strategic competition with the CCP. I don't know if there's a shorter way we can abbreviate that, but
we can just call it the Select Committee on the CCP.
All right, that'll work. So one of the things that I noticed that you all have been working on is this idea of sort of technological infiltration. I don't know if that's too strong a way to put it. You know, Wi-Fi routers, looking at that. I don't talk about some of the concerns here and where I think some of this, sometimes people can look at this stuff and think, boy, are we verging into paranoid territory here, or is there really something going on?
Yeah, I wish I could say that there's nothing to this, but unfortunately what we learned last year, and kind of a startling revelation by the intelligence community, was that the Chinese government and the CCP had engaged in what they called Operation Volt Typhoon. It sounds like something out of James Bond, but essentially it was an operation to pre-position malware in critical infrastructures throughout the United States. And it wasn't meant to collect intelligence on our power grid or water systems or utilities, but rather to disrupt them in the case of conflict. And what was interesting that they found is that some of this malware got pre-positioned through vulnerabilities in routers, like these Wi-Fi routers that are commonly found in businesses or homes. It turns out that one of those types of routers is made by a Chinese company called TP-Link, which is the number one kind of vendor or seller of these routers worldwide. And, what we just recently wrote on a bipartisan basis to the Commerce Department and President Biden is to investigate this particular router and this company, because apparently there are ways to manipulate it remotely. In other words, it contains some of the same vulnerabilities that those routers that Operation Volt Typhoon had preyed upon. And so, it's better to kind of look at it, be very cautious, and then decide what to do after that.
I think it might be worth reminding listeners that this is not, I mean, it's maybe a hypothetical or theoretical threat in this case, but we have seen systems like this deployed in conflicts. In Ukraine, for example.
Yes. Yeah, and also this TP-Link router was actually linked to surveillance and hacking of data that European officials had that apparently was accessed by CCP-related entities. And so this is not merely theoretical. It's something that the Chinese government exploits to their advantage in different ways. You know, another example is Huawei. It's probably more, it's better known to your listeners, but Huawei is a huge maker of telecommunications equipment, one of the largest makers in the planet. What was found with regard to Huawei equipment is that this was routinely being used, backdoors were being implanted in there that were then being exploited by CCP-related entities, and that was a great concern to the federal government, so much so that Huawei is no longer being used in the military or in other governmental purposes. And so that's it's similar to the concern that we have now with regard to these TP-Link routers.
You know, there's a reason that America doesn't buy like fighter planes and military technology from other countries as much as it produces that stuff domestically. Is there an argument? I mean, should ultimately, big picture, we be shifting more of this sort of critical infrastructure production, even down to like the home router that people are using perhaps to stream our show right now, should be done domestically, even if that means higher prices?
What we find is that Americans are increasingly kind of discerning the origin of the technology that they buy and trying to understand, okay, does this present a risk to their families or to their businesses? And so there's a growing demand for that type of technology that's made in either the U.S. or in what we call trusted partners, right? I mean, it could be made in Canada. It could be made in some other country where we know that the government does not try to control the companies or to make sure that they have backdoors in their technology that they can exploit for intelligence purposes. Unfortunately, this is routinely done in the People's Republic of China. This is the thing that perhaps we've learned on this committee that kind of stands out among others, which is that the Chinese government, unfortunately, has essentially enlisted many of its companies in doing some of the intelligence gathering, surveillance, espionage, and other types of kind of nefarious activities, which we don't necessarily, you know, associate with private sectors in other countries. That's the big concern.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are beginning this morning with Congressman Raja Krishnamurti, who is a Democrat from Schaumburg, represents the northwest suburbs of Chicago. President Biden, last night in his speech, made a point of one of the many points he emphasized was job creation, but for people who don't have college degrees. You were in Bloomington, Illinois last week with State Representative Sharon Chung and educational and labor leaders talking about what's known as workforce development. What is the role for the federal government in vocational training?
I'm really glad you brought this up. This is like an incredibly important topic. Just to level set kind of the landscape for your listeners, one third of Americans have a four-year college degree. Two-thirds do not, even now in 2024. But for those two-thirds of Americans who don't have a four-year college degree, we do not have a world-class kind of post-secondary education system for them, whether it's the kind of technical training or vocational training that used to be provided maybe decades ago. That is not routinely done now. However, we've made a change in the way that the federal government funds post-secondary education programs under a law that I co-authored with a Republican named G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania, which provides more resources for those non-four-year college tracks as long as there is a cooperation between the local high school or community college districts and employers in developing the curricula for in-demand jobs, okay? I went to Bloomington, and they are doing some just tremendous work, in part because there's a large demand for highly skilled technical jobs, especially in the EV industry related to Rivian. And there's a shortage. There's a dramatic shortage in people who can perform those jobs. So the Bloomington Career Center brings unions, brings employers together to provide this instruction, classroom instruction, as well as field instruction to students in high schools who can then, after high school, go and work in these different occupations, having accomplished a certification at the career technical education school. This is exactly the type of model that we want throughout the state, quite frankly, and it's something that I have been pushing for the last 8 years. And it's really taking off in a big way.
This gap has been called educational polarization. Talk about how important it is, from your view, that the Democrats do more to serve and reach people, you know, who want to make a decent life for themselves without going to college, because they have been increasingly voting for Republicans.
I think that there's like, I hate to say it, but I think there's kind of an elitist label that's attached to the agenda that Democrats have been pursuing, that somehow we don't necessarily care about the real hopes and dreams of folks who may not want to go to college, but we keep forcing them down that track, or we keep saying that that is what is the mark of success in America, having gone to college. That's like part of the American dream. But increasingly, what I'm telling people, and I think this is finding a ready audience of people willing to listen, is that really the mark of the American dream is whether you can attain a middle-class lifestyle. And there are many paths to doing so. And some involve, you know, doing a four-year college degree and maybe even more. And then some involve attaining the skills to get access to what I call the, greatest social welfare program devised by human beings, which is a J-O-B. And if you can't get a job after a post-secondary education, then we have a big problem. And now with the cost of college going through the roof and the debt associated with that, increasingly people see the non-four-year college track as a viable and attractive means of attaining the skills necessary to get a job. And then, by the way, employers then provide additional resources to get more schooling as necessary. So your employers finance, the rest of your schooling. The one thing I'll just say,
we're almost out of time. Go ahead, though.
The last thing I'll say is that one thing I know is we have to be lifelong learners. You can't stop your education, whether it's going to four-year college or getting an associate's degree. You have to keep advancing in your skill sets. And whatever we can do as a federal government and state government to keep incentivizing and encouraging that, that's a good thing.
Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, my friend.
More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.